Welcome to East Meets West, episode 145. I'm Don Merritt.
And I'm Roger Chang.
And we are in the new East Meets West studio.
Studio, yes.
Also known as a corner of the office where I finally got a desk.
We're in a different room, though. So
yeah, we've recorded in here before a long time ago, but not in any sort of organized way. Now I finally got all the equipment in one place. So I don't have to break it down, set it up every goddamn time.
And, you know, those kids, they don't come running in here. You know, as soon as you put the egg crate foam and,
we'll put a little cork board up and
get thicker curtains.
I have been advocating for the thicker curtains with upper management.
Yes. What has she said?
she's not. She thinks it's too dark.
Well, you could get a thicker curtain that doesn't have to be like dark color. Or
well,
doesn't
no, because it doesn't allow the light through.
Isn't that where you open them up?
I know. Yes. Yes, except I don't like to open the curtains ever.
What are you guys, vampires?
That's what I've been called, yes. I don't know. Maybe it's some kind of paranoia, but I like to keep the curtains closed.
Then why don't you just live in a room without a window?
No, but you want the window. You want to be able to peek through the curtains and see the people as they're coming for you.
So you're creepy, is what you're telling me?
No, you got to be able to see your enemies, you know, so you don't want to block out the window.
Maybe you should live in an area where you're not so threatened.
That's pretty much been everywhere I've ever lived.
Yeah. Good fences sure make good neighbors.
I'm sure there's some sort of psychosocial disorder that could be derived from that. But I went to see The Curious Case of Benjamin Button.
Don't tell me anything because I have yet to see and I want to see it.
He gets younger.
I know.
Oh, okay, I totally ruined it.
Let me ask you this one question.
Okay.
Is it a good movie? Is it?
Yes. I would call it a very entertaining movie. Okay. And I use that word when I enjoy a movie, but I know there are some problems with it. But those problems didn't get in the way of my enjoyment of it.
Got it.
I think it's shot very well. And actually directed very well. The story is based on an F. Scott Fitzgerald short story. They took many liberties with it. So it's if you're thinking, oh, I'll go read the short story and then watch the movie, you know, it doesn't really matter because the story is so different. In fact, I read a posting online that there's another book out that came out in 2004, maybe, about a man who, you know, is born as an old person and gets younger. And a lot of the ideas in Benjamin Button, the movie, seem to have come from that book rather than the F. Scott Fitzgerald.
Hmm.
The author says, hey, you know what? I mean, it's different enough from my book. They probably just had the same ideas I did when they were writing the script. He doesn't seem to be upset by it.
Hmm. Perhaps they get the book influencing the movie based on this other book.
Yeah, possible. Although, I mean, they were in production for Benjamin Button already when that book came out. In fact, Eileen and I were watching a Charlie Rose interview with Brad Pitt. They said they were in post-production for 2 years on Benjamin Button.
Wow. That's a lengthy.
So the script had to have been done around the same time as that book came out.
You know, maybe they were all talking at a party and they were just swapping ideas.
Yeah, he just stole it from them. Who knows? Could be. But yeah, so you definitely want to see that.
I want to see it.
All right.
Even though it has Brad Pitt in it.
He does a good job, actually, and it's not till about three quarters of the way through the movie that he starts to look like Brad Pitt.
Yeah, originally I heard that they wanted to make this movie for quite some time, but they were never sure if they wanted to get multiple actors in order to portray the different ages.
Yeah,
versus one actor with a bunch of prosthetics.
It was interesting. I would like to dive into that more because when Benjamin Button gets to be like 17 looking, and he's very old, but he's 17 looking. I was wondering if they were using the same technology they use in the DirecTV commercials, where they take the old movie clips. But then they have the actor from that movie saying things about DirecTV. Yeah. And I'm pretty sure what they do is they just kind of superimpose the lips with the new dialogue into the old movie.
Oh, you mean the ones where they're trying to get you to buy up the new?
Yeah, so it's like the guy from Terminator talking about how he's really a nice guy, or the woman from the Chevy Chase movie.
Oh, Vacation. No, yeah. Christy Brinkley?
Yeah.
The one that married... those are actually all the original actors. They just redid...
But they don't... They look exactly like they did in the movie in those pieces, and they're in the settings from the movie.
No,
there's some digital effect going on, right?
There is, but it's the actual actors, too.
Yeah, right.
Because there are parts of it where they obviously... Especially with the one with Sigourney Weaver, her head's turned way too long, and there was never any portion of the movie that had that scene where, you know, her head was turned away. So what I think they did is they got them on the same set, and then they altered enough of their physique so they looked close enough to what they were back then. In other words, they did a lot of basically digital airbrushing lines and stuff.
I'm thinking they did that with
Brad Pitt
as well, because he looks like a young Brad Pitt.
Does he also look younger because his face is a little thinner, not as...
Yeah, see, I think they do a little squeezing, a little digital. Yeah. Like I said, there's digital effects in there that are good. And then, of course, when he's below the teenage level, then it's a different actor.
Yeah.
It's no longer...
A talking baby.
They've got Kate Blanchett. She's herself all the way through after, I think... 12.
Right.
You know, they've got a different actor up until she becomes a young woman. Then it's Kate Blanchett. And I think they also did some digital stuff with her, cuz she looks really young in those early parts. And then she's herself the rest of the movie.
Can you imagine if you could do that in real life? Make yourself look younger automatically.
What is real life? I mean, we can do it, Roger. We'll just film you.
Uh-huh.
Speaking of film, we have Roger and me on film.
Or video.
Actually, digital video, not film at all.
Yeah, no.
There's nothing film about it, except in an allegorical or metaphorical sense.
Maybe
perhaps.
More of a metaphorical.
Maybe more of a metaphorical, yeah.
Allegory.
It wouldn't really be an allegory. It's an allegory for our lives, though.
Don't say that, because it makes me really depressed.
we've mentioned before that generally when we record East Meets West at my house instead of at the CNET studios, we will go out and grab something to eat afterwards. So Eileen documented our big dinner last week at the Camino restaurant.
Camino.
In Oakland. Maybe restaurants would like to look at this video and take it as an opportunity for sponsorship. You just see what kind of treatment we could give you.
True.
It's like a 2-minute ad for Camino, which I have to say we received no compensation for, yet was a delicious meal.
Now, if it was a horrible, horrible meal, we would probably have been a lot more disparaging about the...
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
about our entrees.
We're not going to... They're probably not going to want to pay for us, to be honest. About their
Why,
meal.
This is the most rancid salad I've ever had.
But, I mean, this place was good enough that it impressed you.
Yes, and it was pricey. It wasn't like, you know, what was it? $29 for
something like that.
For each of our entrees. Uh-huh. And that's not including the hors d'oeuvres or the beverages
or
the dessert.
I had a cocktail, actually. It was a kind of a sidecar sort of thing. It was good. Like, you know, it was not just because it was alcohol. It was tasty. It was well made. The dessert, I thought the dessert was good.
I had the chocolate sorbet, which is funny because the only time I've ever actually had chocolate sorbet, I've gotten like Trader Joe's, and it always comes out tasting like chocolate ice.
Yeah, exactly. It's hard to make sorbet
creamy,
that's not fruity, I think. But yeah, it was a beef shoulder and beef tenderloin, right?
It's tenderloin and pork shoulder.
Pork shoulder and beef tenderloin. Delicious.
All the both meat groups represented, other than chicken and fish.
And grilled baby Cthulhu for appetizer.
Yes. Well, Cthulhu really isn't a cephalopod. It's just
has the appearance of one.
Well, at least part of the...
And that's why it was such a rarity to have as an appetizer.
Well, you've had similar things for appetizers.
Cthulhu? Or are you referring to squid?
Calamari, squid.
Calamari. That was actually one of the more disappointing naming conventions in Return of the Jedi.
The Calamari?
It was General Calamari, and he's an octopus guy.
No, they're the Mon Calamari. That's the race.
I know, but I mean, seriously.
It's George Lucas. What do you want?
At least most of the time he's a little more subtle.
Like what?
Like Wookiee. Where'd that come from?
I don't know. Maybe it's his...
Well, but I can tell you exactly where calamari came from. It came off a menu.
Well, what do you think that, you know...
That would be like calling the Wookiees the big bear people.
Well, what do you think about the Ewoks? I mean, basically they
Ewoks are just Wookiee backwards.
Yes. Essentially what they were. I mean,
But it's not as obvious. You don't look at Ewok and go, well, that's obvious. Because calling him the teddy bear ish is right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Mon Calamari. Order it. Don't name your fictional characters after
yes.
it.
Yes. And use tartar sauce if available.
Tartar. Like tauntauns.
See? And those are really just a bunch of, you know, polar kangaroos.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
With horns.
Well, this is will be our last East Meets West before 2009.
Oh, that's right. We're in that in-between period between Christmas and the New Year.
Yes, also known as the Dead Zone.
Between Tick and Tock?
Between Tick and Tock. Yeah, I made a metric calendar once.
A metric calendar.
I made an attempt. I was, you know, it's kind of annoying that the months are like, which one's 30, which one's 31, then we got the stupid one with 28, sometimes it's 29. So I added the idea, like, could you standardize the calendar? And you can. You can divide it up into equal parts, but you always have a little bit left over because we have 365 yes. days in a year. And that is determined. That's not man-made. There is a real year. Yep. You know, the Earth goes around the sun once, and days are real. I mean, it's the amount of time it takes for the Earth to rotate. So you can't really mess
complete
with that.
You could. You could sort of speed rotation.
Well, you could physically mess with yeah. it, but you can't, you know, you can't redefine those.
Yes, that's true.
So,
I mean, you could redefine it. However, I mean, our months are basically based on the phases of the moon, or were.
Yeah. That's true. So, I mean, that's why we've got the 30 and 31. But that you can play with a little more. But I always ended up with like a 5-day period left over, or maybe a 10-day period, depending on how you sliced it. Mm-hmm. So I figured that week between Christmas and New Year's was as good of a week as any to make like the extra period, and that should just be time off, you know. That's the extra days, and you can make it 6 days on the leap year. Easy, everybody remembers. Oh, it's leap year. We get an extra day on the extra week.
Mm-hmm.
Think that'll ever catch on?
No.
Okay, I actually have a more East Meets West like topic. Christmas.
Yes.
Over the holidays, and I do
we're
try.
We're still technically in the holidays.
I do try to say holidays most of the time because there are a lot of different holidays going on. Right? There's mm-hmm. Kwanzaa. There's Hanukkah. There's Christmas. There's
Festivus,
Solstice. So, when I'm speaking generically, I don't mind saying holidays, but on Christmas Day, there are people who get upset.
Or bent at it, you
when
mean?
You say Merry Christmas. And I'm like, you know what? It is Christmas. Do you get bent out of shape on Halloween when someone says Happy Halloween? Do
oh,
you say,
wait.
Oh, I'm not a Christian. I don't celebrate Halloween.
Well, let me ask you this. What precipitated this entire... Did something
Actually,
happen
I,
to
no,
you?
No, I saw a few different examples of this. One in person, most of them online.
Okay.
Of people saying, I'm not a Christian. Quit wishing me Merry Christmas. Or, you know... Or this general thing that's been around for a long time. And it's been brought to a head by the ultra-right saying there's a war on Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And then the ultra-left fighting back saying, don't you dare wish me a Merry Christmas. I'm not Christian. I don't celebrate Christmas. And it's like, people, just I wish everyone would just relax and be reasonable. And be like, you know what? Christmas is the 25th. It's a widely recognized holiday, especially in the Christian countries. You know, in the areas, and when I say Christian countries, I don't mean the countries that are governed by Christians, but countries that have a large population of Christians in them. It's Christmas.
Well, let me ask you this: if someone went to a foreign country and there was a holiday out there, and whatever the phrase or you know how the well-wishers use, do you just say, "Hey, happy whatever"?
Yeah.
Would those same people be upset?
That's a great way of putting it.
Because
which is like if you're visiting a foreign country and they say Happy Bastille Day, do you say, "Well, I'm not French. Please don't wish me a Happy Bastille Day"?
What it sounds like is it sounds when people, and this is my personal opinion, so don't anyone else judge Tom on this matter. I think it's really just a large passive aggressive move from people who, you know. Who I think feel that they are somehow either been slighted,
mm-hmm.
or that they feel that since they can't get their way, they're just not going to have anyone have their you know spoil
Possibly.
Sports essentially.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You hear it
a lot from atheists.
You hear it a lot from quote unquote self-proclaimed atheists because I've known a few and during the you know, during the Christmas holiday, they come over and drink eggnog like everyone else.
Exactly. And it's a touchy you know what issue it is? When you get into the reason for the season.
No, I think I hit on it. It's a way for people to identify with a particular ideology. It's kind of their way of saying, look, I'm this.
Yeah.
By doing the exact opposite.
There's sort of a rebellion aspect to it.
Yeah.
Definitely. Which is like, I'm going to define myself by my opposition to this.
Which I think is the worst way to define yourself, because then in that point, what if, you know, if you can only define yourself in an opposite way, like, well, you're big, so I'm going to be smaller. You know, you're so headstrong, I'm going to be super, you know.
I do think there at least was at one time, and probably still is, a legitimate need to raise a hand and say, hey, you know what, I'm Jewish, so don't assume that I'm celebrating Christmas the way you're celebrating Christmas.
No,
And I think that's fair. And I think it's fair for atheists to say, you know what, if I celebrate Christmas, it's not going to be celebrating Christ's birth, so reason for the season doesn't apply to me, and I respect that too.
I read this column from a Jew, and I guess a non-practicing Jew, because, you know, he didn't do any of the Jewish, you know, high holidays all, mm-hmm. you know, all up either. And just says, like, you know, I find it kind of odd, and he wrote in the, I find it kind of odd in the past 10 or 15 years, a lot of quote unquote Jews try to define themselves, especially during, you know, holidays like Christmas, by saying, well, I don't celebrate because I'm Jewish, as a way to define themselves within that group.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and it's kind of interesting because, you know, one of the big Jewish traditions he was joking during, which, you know, has a lot of truth in it, is, you know, Jews celebrate Christmas by going to a Chinese restaurant in
right.
a movie.
And that's kind of, Christmas Story. Yeah. Makes you know, it's not a Jewish family in that yeah. case, but yeah. But,
so, you know, it's, I've always found it kind of weird, though, to identify, or at least, you know, kind of celebrate yourself by being in opposition to something else. It seems so negative when you could do, I think, you could be a lot more proactive and positive. Say, like, you know, hey, I'm Wiccan or whatever. I'll do whatever Wiccan, you know,
solstice.
Yeah,
yeah.
Festivities surround that. So whatever.
Which,
you know.
Christmas has its roots in solstice.
Yeah.
The 25th
is not
was the Roman solstice. We've got it on the 21st now, but under the old Julian calendar before the Gregorian reform, the 25th was the solstice. It was a Roman holiday of the unconquered sun, and the church went in and said, okay, that's now Christmas.
Well, they did
because
we
want to appropriate
that was All Hallows Eve too. I mean, you know, Halloween
So
I don't see, that's why I don't understand when people get upset. It's like, you know, my family doesn't really celebrate. We don't put up the tree anymore. In fact, we haven't put up a tree in the
tree
past.
A pagan tradition
from Germany.
Yeah. Bringing in the forest gods to celebrate the
and then putting
winter.
And then and trimming the tree as well.
Yes.
So it's, I don't know. I think it's one of those silly aspects of the what people popularly refer to as the culture war, which I think is so absurd, because all it seems like are people not focusing on the big issues, but they're niggling on the small stuff.
Yeah,
it just seems like,
well, and I definitely, for anybody out there who's like, well, Tom, you have to understand this is what happened. I understand the history of it, which was Christmas was actually becoming commercialized, and it was becoming a holiday like Halloween that had left behind most of its religious meaning.
Yes.
And there was a religious backlash against that. And that's when we started to see, and I don't know when exactly, but I remember it starting to become a big deal like in the early 80s. The reason for the season. Let's not forget why we celebrate Christmas, and this big push to bring Jesus back into Christmas. And I think for Christians, that is great. That is perfectly acceptable, and that should happen. But a lot of people in the mainstream who had kind of gotten into celebrating Christmas even though they weren't Christian or weren't very religious, started to have a backlash against that, saying, look, I'm not. That's not the reason for the season for me. The reason for the season for me is that, hey, it's a holiday in December and everybody takes it off and it means peace and goodwill. And that sounds like a good idea to me. And so that's when we started to get this, okay, fine, let's have a holiday, but don't call it Christmas to me if you want the reason for the season to be Jesus' birth, because I'm Hindu.
You know, that's the thing. I've never, ever met anyone who's... The only people I've ever met who are in strict opposition to using that term have been, again, self-proclaimed atheists. I've run into Hindus, Buddhists, you know, and they all, like, you know, they all come bearing gifts. It's like, you know, it's what you do during the season. But they don't, for some reason, it doesn't seem to bother
them. Well, Thanksgiving is a more religious holiday than Christmas in its in its actual like profession. I mean, the idea is you get around, you eat a big turkey, and you give thanks. Well, who are you supposed to give thanks to? I guess you can give it to whomever you want, but you know, the original idea was give thanks to God. That Christmas obviously has more religious roots in the mythology of Christianity, but it doesn't have there's nothing else to Thanksgiving but the giving of the thanks.
When I'm reading,
so you're going to object to that too?
When I'm reading editorials or foreign newspapers that are written in the English language, I often find that one of the biggest complaints is how American Christmas has totally ruined the meaning of Christmas with the gift giving and all. And it's just so funny.
Oh, the commercialism.
Like Santa Claus was, you know, Santa Claus was a creation of an ad agency.
Right.
And, you know, the red coat and all that stuff he wore was because that's what they designed it. It wasn't because, you know, St. Nicholas actually went around in a giant sleigh pulled by flying reindeer.
No.
That was all manufactured.
We know Father Christmas appears on foot.
So, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, honestly, people, give it a rest. That's just me. I
think the whole debate over, call it Christmas, don't wish me Merry Christmas, ruins what I consider to be the universally appealing thing about the 25th of December. For however we got here, it's that one day of peace on earth, goodwill to men. And I think that is a fantastic thing to celebrate no matter what your belief is. And so maybe that's a little, you know, pie in the sky or idealistic of me. But when you try to foist your religious belief onto someone else, or likewise get all upset, like, don't you wish me Merry Christmas because I don't believe in Christ.
You should say, because Tom is actually wagging his head. He's almost finger snapping.
At least once during every episode lately, you have to describe my motions.
It's because it's funny.
You really want this to be a video podcast, don't you?
Anyways, proceed.
Anyway, I think that's all.
You know, the thing is, you know,
got up on my high horse.
Whatever the holiday is, I mean,
and that's the thing. It's Christmas, particularly because Christmas actually does have a lot of real meaning to people, and I think that's why people get so rebellious against it and so upset about it in a way that they don't about Easter, and they, you know,
well, you know,
and you don't about Halloween.
It's, I don't know, or Valentine or all the other...
Right, Valentine's Day, Saint Valentine's Day is a, you know, it's the patron saint of love.
So, I mean, you know, and it's, you know, if you have things to bicker over, I would say bicker over weightier issues than that. That's just me. I think it's one of those things that solves nothing and just creates acrimony and makes, you know, basically foist animosity on everyone, because it's like, well, who are you to be such a spoilsport, or who are you to be, you know, so sanctimonious? It just seems out of whack for what the season should be.
That's why I like Dickens' Christmas Carol so much. It's by far and away my favorite Christmas story, because while it does have the elements of the religious underpinnings in it, it doesn't hit you over the head with them. No. And in fact, you can get a whole lot out of it without even bothering with that part of it if you want. Because what Dickens' point was, let's be nice to each other, and that this day represents that. Whatever you believe,
can
we have a hug now?
Oh no!
Let's look forward to 2009. We've got an economy in shambles. Terrorism on the rise after an 8-year war against it. Russia, kind of, you know, posturing and playing their old Soviet national anthem and you know, eyeballing the rest of the former Soviet Union around them. But oil prices in the tank, so not so much good news for them there.
2009, like I said last week, is going to be a very challenging period, but it's also one where you can't... I honestly think you can't put a beat on one thing that will either be fixed, or you can predict accurately how it will turn out. I think it's going to be one of those unpredictable years where, because of the state of the world as it is, anything can happen.
We've got some interesting elections coming up. Germany will have their election.
Yes.
Iran will be having an election. A couple of elections in Iraq too.
So it's one of the, it's a very even more so. I mean, the world's always been kind of touch and go, but I mean, this is very...
Is Brazil having their election this year, too?
Are they?
Is that right?
I don't know. You mean 2009?
I may be wrong. Yeah, 2009, sorry.
Because 2008 isn't over yet.
Oh, it's not over yet, people. It can still get worse.
Yeah, don't say that. But interesting. I mean, like, everything, all the conventional wisdom that people went into 2008 with has suddenly been, like, totally thrown out of whack. People were predicting, you know, $200 a barrel for oil.
Yeah.
People were.
And what is it, 30 now? It was in the 30s last I checked.
There are a lot of countries, the BRIC countries, Western Europe and Canada, kind of triumphantly proclaiming they've decoupled their economies from the U.S. economy, mm-hmm. and that while the U.S. economy might slow down and tumble, it won't have that much of an effect on the rest of the world.
Yeah, too late.
Yeah, so. And, you know, China was supposed to be this, you know, emerging superpower with this amazing ability to manufacture, process, produce, and
the Olympics
ship.
Were going to be the showcase for all of that.
And, you know, now they're running into issues where the factories are running idle and, you know, all those factory workers are either going home or they're trying to find other work. You know, that's putting that particular government in kind of a what do we do mode. Russia is, as you said, is once again trying to poke its trying to puff out its chest.
Interesting article in the Economist year-end issue where they sort of analyze the fact that Russia may have overextended themselves with their actions in Georgia because they banked on high oil prices. And at this point, now their strength is depleted quite a bit because of the low oil prices, and they've really eroded their relations with the West, and they don't have the leverage that they used to have.
Well, it's interesting because of all the, you know, as much hoopla people gave over the Georgian War, it was actually more, I think it was more illuminating the fact that it required the Russian military to expend as much manpower and resources to it for something that should be ostensibly a very small scale.
Yeah, and they pointed out in this article they were already in control of Abkhazia and South Ossetia, and
yeah, they were in
it's
it.
Like, why did they waste the resources on that?
Well, it's the same way. It's like you know, why station two strategic bombers in Venezuela that at most have a 25% chance of making it through to the U.S. and dropping a warlord.
It's symbolism.
It's symbolic, but yeah. You know what people don't understand is it's costing them a lot to maintain that sense of power because, you know, as the conflict with Georgia shown and, you know, the Kursk incident, you know, 8 years back, is that the Russian military is actually quite run down. Their conscripts are considered relatively low quality in terms
Could we see another government fall in Russia? If I mean, really, and just summarize it up in from what I know, which isn't all that much, but it seems like Putin has played on a regret of the Russian people. After the fall of the Soviet Union, they felt like they had lost their standing in the world. And he has played upon that to say, we have brought pride back to Mother Russia. And they reinstated the old Soviet national anthem, and they rebuilt the you know, the swagger on the world stage, and things like going, you know, taking control of South Ossetia and Abkhazia, things like basing bombers in Venezuela and kind of rubbing the U.S.'s nose in a little bit, have all fed that pride of like, yes, Putin has brought us back. We are strong again. But if they're not really strong again, yeah. And this is all posturing, at some point, don't the less fortunate, the poor, the Chechens, the Muslim minorities start to
get restless,
rise up and say, well, hey, you know what? That's great that you got those bombers in Venezuela, but what about our rights and what about our food?
Well, I think the food is the big issue, food and money. And, you know, the danger now is that, you know, as you know, kind of far-fetched as it may sound, there could be an event that happens that turns Russia even more into a kind of a fascist state where you have mm-hmm. ultra-nationalism at the helm. You know, people, you know, you'll have apologists, well, Putin's been too nice, he's been too open, he's been too willing to
yeah.
negotiate.
Yeah, that's, sure, even though that's, it sounds ridiculous. It's but, quite possible.
But I think Putin managed to tap in the vein. It wasn't just regret. It's a sense of ethnic pride
mm-hmm.
that the Russians had, and that's what he was basing it on. And it's not, I don't think it's a, you know.
And the fall of the Soviet Union was a blow to that pride. You know, I think at first it was hailed as freedom, But after a while, it was like, well, wait a minute. Now we're not the big superpower anymore.
Well, the thing is, you know, when you were on a state subsidy like state welfare and something that's taken away from you, if you don't see your personal lot or the lot of your close friends get any better, you say, what's the point?
Yeah.
Why did we do this? Now we've lost prestige. We've lost our clout. We've lost money. You know,
the loss of the taking away that security blanket was supposed to be compensated with the ability to rise and be wealthy.
And, you know, at the time they were, but unfortunately I think the past 4-8 years have kind of been squandered because they've leveraged so much on commodity prices instead of reinvesting that money back into, you know, the commerce, public infrastructure, you know, hospitals, schools, roads, things like that. And, you know, instead they were squandered like the way that Hugo Chavez did, took all that money he had and basically bought favors from other countries with it instead of reinvesting it back into the country directly.
All right. Well, that about wraps it up for us today. We'll be recording again next week before we head off to CES, right?
Hopefully.
Okay. So look for our coming in the late evening of Sunday next.
Okay.
And maybe we'll be there. And you can carry on the discussion as you have been, which is great. And Roger even jumped in on the discussion on the blog this past week. So brilliant.com/EMW. See you later, folks.
Bye. Oh, Stonestown. What a crappy mall that is. Even with all the money in it. You think they would, after spending all that money, they could at least figure out how to make the mall so it doesn't slope?
I love Stonestown Mall. I never noticed any sloping.
No, I mean, like, if you walk from where Macy's is down to the end.
Yeah. It's probably just the natural ground.
That's what I'm saying. You think they would try to at least make it level.
Does it really bother you that it slopes?
Yes, it does.
Why?
Because it just seems like, you know, you should at least try to level it or something. I don't know. It just seems, you know, if you're going to go through the trouble of spending millions of dollars building a new mall, you know, make it level.
Maybe it's a little exercise program for the mall walkers.
Maybe.